This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
And Brooke Wire, you are. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
It's been a fun morning already. I promise it would be a good morning when we started the show, even though the Mariners didn't really have a good day yesterday. We've made it a good show so far. Mike Lefko, Brock Heward here with you. We are getting back to the Mariners, Brock. Talked a lot of Seahawks last hour. We will get back to the Mariners and those looming offensive issues. And Mora brought up something that was an interesting, fascinating discussion and perhaps a wild idea.
She tends to do that, Mike.
Yeah, but you know what? It's got some basis in needed merit because the Mariners offense needs some help. They need a bat. They need something, right, to shake up what's going on. They got a lot of pitching. Mm-hmm. And I know they are very keen, you know, probably on holding on to their pitching. But Jim Bowden of The Athletic, former MLB GM, now he writes to The Athletic, covers Major League Baseball, put out a way too early trade proposal idea for a couple of teams based on the Luis Arraez trade. The Padres just jumped on that and grabbed him a couple of days ago. So in his trade idea, he has the Mariners sending Emerson Hancock and Ty France to the Mets for one Pete Alonso. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I flush that. I flush that down the toilet.
From which side? From the Mariners side?
I do. I flush it for a couple reasons. Initially, I'll be honest with you. Initially, I'm like, I like it. I think I even texted you guys, or certainly had a buddy of mine send me that. And my first blush, I like it. And then I'm like, don't be an idiot. It's easy enough for you to be an idiot. Just really think about this for just a little bit. I'm going to take umbrage with something you said right there. The Mariners got a lot of pitching. No, they don't. No, they don't. They have five plus one with Wu coming back, already coming back from an elbow that he had to be shut down last August, and he had to be shut down at the end of March. So that's five plus one. And the other Logan Jr., Logan JV in AA, that's been awesome. He may be coming. Outside of that, yeah, you got some guys that could eat some innings at the AAA level, but you don't have, you've got, yeah, I don't say you've got a lot of pitching. I don't look at it that way because you can never have enough. You can never, ever, 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 ever have enough. So that's number one. Number two, I think I'd like to see Ty Locklear before I'd like to see the polar bear. And if he continues to do what he's doing at AA, I think you've got that kind of, now, obviously, what Pete Alonso's done is tremendous, and his track record's amazing, and he's a remarkable, remarkable talent. And Ty Locklear's not taken one swing in the big leagues. But I think you've got that guy that that fits, I guess, kind of some of that role waiting for you. And he's the one dude down in the minors right now that they were excited about in spring training when we were down there in February and March, a name that we heard a little bit. Keep a little eye. Keep a little watch on this guy. He's sure doing some good things. He sure looks like a bona fide difference maker. And he's the one dude at the start of the season, Lefko, that in your minor league system is answering the call and is answering the bell.
So, yeah, at what point, and I think maybe if the exact parameters of this trade are a little out there and they wouldn't really help the Mariners because Alonso's a free agent at the end of the season, so you're getting maybe a few months, and we know the Mariners aren't really necessarily going to do that. A lot of teams have held on to their guys. They don't want to give them up for the short-term rental. That's not how the Mariners have operated. They have built up this system. They built up this pitching. They have built where they are with these guys in the lineup as well. But at what point, if this continues along this path, and we often preach short term, you know, we are going to see something one day, we have to overreact, you know, it's the last game we have to go on. But over the course of a long season, as you mentioned when we started this show, that kind of evens out. If you're still going like this, though, where your pitching is consistent, your offense is very erratic, and you're in all these low scoring games, do you consider a change?
Yeah.
And a change might not be that trade, but a change in, hey, we have to do something drastic to upend this lineup because it's just not working.
50-50-50, right? 50 games to evaluate the situation, 50 games to start to make those changes, and then 50 games to finish the race. So you're 35 in, right? You got the rest of this month of May, maybe 50, 60 games, you know, where you're going to really give, you know, everybody, you're going to give Ty France this opportunity, right? A guy that reinvented himself and you know, has tried to rebuild his body and his swing and everything else. But dude's got to get going this month. I mean, I think he's smart enough to know. He was at spring training. He looked at this dude that was like 6'3", 240, and was a super productive college player, and has kind of buzzed through the system is a bat in a really, really good way, and it's a good first baseman. And like, yep, that dude's looming. I know I got to produce. I know how this league works and this business works. You know, if you're Mitch Garver and Polanco, I think you've got a little more time. You know, Mitch signed to a 2-year deal. As AJ Pierczynski said to us yesterday, he's going to be given the benefit of the doubt. He's going to give his time to really settle into a DH position. Remember last year, he still caught like 26 games. He was in every DH like 55 times. So this is a new world that in rhythm that he is living in. So I think those two guys, Polanco and Garver, will be given more time. But I do think a Ty France is on a little bit of a watch simply because there's a piece behind him. That's a pretty, pretty talented bat.
Well, Brock, you said something interesting a few hours ago about Emerson Hancock, and I did want to get back to it here as well. So that kind of jogged my memory that we were talking about the trade.
Yep.
But we're going to see Brian Wu up here soon. I mean, that's all but assumed. He's going to come up this weekend. He made his third rehab start. The Mariners are coming back into town. You expect Brian Wu will be back up here. You mentioned maybe Emerson Hancock going down to AAA. Now, I know Jeff Passan told you guys he'd want to consider Emerson Hancock maybe in not such a defined role, but in the bullpen as a weapon out of the bullpen instead of just losing him entirely. Would you rather see that? Or would you want to send him down to AAA? And at what point do you say, you know what? What's he really gaining down there in AAA?
Yeah, I think I want to keep him in that rhythm of being a starter. Yeah, I think that's who he is. He's done a really nice job for you. I hope he finishes super strong today. You know, I had a situation, Mike, in my career where I was like, man, I was kind of at a crossroads. I don't know how much more of this I can do. I remember just going out to a practice being like, just let it rip, man. Who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what, if you're going to be here, you're not going to be here. The last thing you want to do is keep any gas in the tank or overthink this thing. Just go and be free. Like one of the best practices in my professional life. And I hope for Emerson today, it's the same mindset. Like, hey, I know Wu's coming. All expectations are, Mike, is that move is going to happen this week. And, you know, he's done nothing but been terrific in all of his rehab starts. And his stuff has a higher ceiling than Emerson does in some degree. So I hope if you're Hancock, man, just go out and do what you've done largely. You know, save for your last start, maybe one other, four of the other ones have been awesome. Go control the zone. Go have tremendous command today. Go give this team six innings. Go get a win and keep yourself in rhythm down in AAA.
Well, here's why I'm kind of interested in Jeff Passan's idea. Simply because what happens when you don't get that dominant outing from Mariners starter? I think it's unfair to say, hey, you have to go seven innings every single time. You have to be Logan Gilbert and go eight innings. So if they go six, which is fine, I mean, that's a good outing. That's a solid outing right there. Most guys go six innings. Mm-hmm. So when you get that sixth inning, how do you turn it over to the bullpen and Andres Munoz? Because right now, it's becoming pretty clear there is a lack of high leverage options outside of Munoz. Look at his last two outings. He had to come in, get four outs against the Astros. He didn't get five outs in a save against the Braves. So that's not sustainable for me. And it's why the Hancock idea, while something I wouldn't have considered on the outset, that becomes pretty intriguing because you take a good weapon like that and then you put him as a bullpen option.
I don't
option.
Think he'd ever be a leverage arm, though, right? He'd just be an inning eater out there is kind of what Jeff's point was.
Well, Jeff said, why not take a good guy and have him throw the three? And he could be that guy instead of
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, just kind of finish the whole thing
He's
from beginning
to end.
He's
the guy. He'd take a good weapon in there. And instead of Munoz coming in all the time, because look what happened to Matt Brash. MLB leading appearances last year. Now he's hurt. Munoz, you really love to work him, but you saw some wear and tear from him last year as well. So what if you do get like a six-inning outing from a starter and then Emerson Hancock is there
just
as a three-inning
guy? Just nails
it
down for the final three. Yeah. I mean, that's possible. I guess Santos also comes into play here. We've heard very little of him and his recovery. He is and was supposed to be one of those great leveraged arms. Stanek missed most of spring training. That kind of ramped him up. I mean, he's been in parts terrific. So, you know, I think there still are some pieces out there. These are good problems to have, and that's why you don't trade them. You know, these last 3 minutes of talking about him leads me further to, man, you don't trade a valuable piece for a rental. You just don't do it, especially when it's the strength of your team, which is your pitching.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a wild proposal, and Bowden said as much in his article. It brought to mind, though, you need some offensive help, whether that is bringing someone else up or finding a way to get a spark in this lineup. But Emerson Hancock, he'll play a big role. We'll hear about that a little bit more coming up next in What You Need to Know. This is Mike Lefko and Brock Huard here on Brock and Salk on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
We were just talking about Emerson Hancock, and it's a big opportunity for him today. He gets the start against right-hander Bailey Ober. And Brock, we mentioned that Brian Wu made his third rehab start over the weekend. He looked good. 5 shutout innings, struck out 6, allowed just 3 hits on Saturday. And we think it's his final rehab start because, you know, the Mariners do return home. We'll get full injury updates from Justin Hollander when they are back, first game in the homestand. But right now, it looks like Brian Wu is pushing to get back up here.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of, I think, conversation there along the lines. You know, we heard from some folks behind the scenes. Guys have little nicks and bumps that they're just dealing with. And there are some folks in Wu and Santos. And we haven't heard an update on Brash. As we know, he went down to Texas with the team or the week before the team to his specialist down there. So hopefully there will be some good news trending there. And hopefully, you know, yes, Emerson has a great final start. I think this will be it. I don't think that's any kind of some hot take. I think Brian Wu is ready to go. And when Wu is ready, he's going to get the ball and he's going to get the opportunity to add to this staff that has just been filthy. And Luis was once again filthy last night. An unearned run actually got changed to, I think, an earned run because it did hit the base as they took second and third review of that thing. But he was good enough. He gave you every opportunity to get it going. Unfortunately, bases loaded, no outs, a chance to break that game open. They don't. They tie it. They can't add on. And Minnesota wins game one of a 4-game set.
Yeah, I forgot to ask Corey about this. Weather was not supposed to be good this morning. Looked like it was clearing up a little bit. You know, we hate a rain out. They should just build a roof, put a roof on it. But it looks like despite some rain earlier today and a chance of rain this afternoon, they will hopefully, knock on wood, get this game in. So pregame coverage for that begins at 3:30, a 4:40 first pitch. And it's kind of key because it's early. It's May 7th, but the Rangers also beat the A's 4-2 yesterday to win their third straight. They have slid into first. The Mariners now a half game back in the AL West.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Brock, got a couple of NFL things for you. We talked to Brady Henderson about a lot of Seahawks stuff. He reported yesterday that Mike Jackson's salary has been restructured. It's now slightly over $1 million, all non-guaranteed, but the Seahawks did give him a nice chunk and a signing bonus, so slightly over $167,000. But a few more moves. I know one will affect this show. Rashad Penny has signed with the Panthers as Dave Canales continues to build up all the former Seahawks out there.
If and when Salk hears that news, and he may not, but if and when he does, he will certainly be very disappointed in that because he's the biggest Rashad Penny. You know what's amazing is like his yards per carry, truth be told, like I get where Salk's coming from. His yards per carry in his career is 5.5. I mean, that is a remarkable, remarkable number. The problem is those attempts, unfortunately, have been far and few between because of health issues, durability issues, and just ability issues at times. As far as Mike Jack, get ready to compete, man. You heard Brady Henderson say they had fourth-round grades on those two corners they took in the fifth and sixth round. Those are both press man guys. This system's going to ask a lot more. It's going to ask those guys to be able to play press man coverage, to do it consistently so they can get after the quarterback. And, yeah, it's going to be one heck. If there is one position on this team where you could say it is going to be one heck of a competition in camp, I think corner is right at the top of the list. Safety, pretty well earmarked. Linebacker, pretty well earmarked. Defensive line can play all 8 of those guys. But cornerback, it is going to be a really, really feisty spot to be determined in August.
Yeah, a couple more NFL transactional notes. Joe Burrow began throwing for the first time since the wrist injury that ended his season in mid-November last year. And former Chiefs wide receiver Marquez Valdez-Scantling is visiting the Chargers today. That's according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
A couple of injury updates around baseball, including this Rangers team the Mariners are now chasing. They put their star rookie Wyatt Langford on the IL, right hamstring strain, expected to miss about 3 to 4 weeks. And the Rangers opening day starter Nathan Eovaldi is visiting a specialist for his right groin strain. Doesn't sound fun. Right groin, left groin, it all hurts the same. But another injury note there, Stephen Kwan on the IL. The Guardians called up Kyle Manzardo, a second round pick out of Washington State in 2021. Tough debut. He'll certainly hopefully stick a little bit better, though. He had his welcome to the bigs moment, 0 for 3, 3 strikeouts yesterday. But I know this sent you down a deep dive, Brock.
It did.
All the great Cougs baseball players.
Yeah, 4 first-rounders. Yeah, I was curious where Manzardo ranked in the annals of Cougar draft baseball history, and there actually have been 4 of them, and a couple familiar names, including Aaron Seeley out here, and John Olerud. Actually not a first-rounder, not a second-rounder, a third-rounder. Like yours truly, but his career went far better than mine ever did.
Yeah, no. It's okay. It's all right. You got the good picture. I was just checking out your old Twitter or X profile page there.
Yeah.
Got the picture.
Back in the day.
You and Peyton.
Back in the day.
Taking those snaps, yeah.
Yep, and you and I both watched a little NBA basketball, knowing the Supersonics. We're going to be back here, I think, in
back
a few short years. And, man, when the Sonics do come back, build your team like the Timberwolves.
I don't want to mention. Justin mentioned it. Speaking of the Nuggets, Justin, we do have to know this, right? Mm-hmm. You brought it up. This date is an infamous one. It's a painful one.
Sorry
in Sonics history.
Sorry about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, and I'm going to argue, maybe the second most painful memory, like just stark memory. Obviously, Malcolm Butler, number one, never be a second. That's the Super Bowl. That's right there. It's everything. I think Dikembe Mutombo laying on the old Coliseum court, wagging his big, long finger, no, hugging the basketball as the first 8 seed to beat a 1 seed. Man, that was debilitating. I couldn't stand that guy in that situation.
Yeah, so that's something you probably didn't want to know, but it is everything you need to
on
know.
On this date, huh?
You mentioned
on this date?
Yeah, this date, right? This was
correct.
On this date. So there is everything you need to know. You mentioned it, Brock, though. The Timberwolves destroyed the Nuggets 106-80 to take a 2-0 series lead. Knicks beat the Pacers to take game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals. And the Mora shout-out, Bruins, take game one over the Panthers 5-1. Impressive Bruins
Morgan
win.
Morgan Geeky shout-out, former Kraken player,
Geeky
second
had
goal of the playoffs.
Huge goal. That was a big goal. That put them up, 2-1, I think. And it was a deflected rebound, hit it in the top of the cage.
Personal
there.
Question.
Impressive.
Enough of that stuff. Personal question left.
Rock, not a hockey fan.
Yeah, personal. No,
we
hockey
will hold
fan.
That. We will hold that against you.
Yeah, personal question. You sent us a little picture from your home last night.
Yeah.
Is this how you operate? You have multiple computers.
Playoff season, absolutely.
Do you also have a TV in the background, or do you watch things just on the computers, or how do you
go
about
it? No, the TV
it?
Was Mariners.
The TV
I
is
thought that was assumed because
no,
we were watching.
Tell.
We were all watching the Mariners game. You're not on Instagram, Brock. You could see the whole array of it if you just hop on that Instagram story of mine.
That
but
so
it's
cool.
We talked about this once, right?
And eventually,
best time
some
of the year.
Eventually, some lady is going to think that's incredibly attractive. Eventually, some lady is going to come to the crib and be like, "Look at this! I love this guy.
Really,
he's got multiple computers.
Paddleboard in the corner.
Yes, he's watching hockey on one, NBA on the other. Mariners up there. I love this." This guy.
She better be okay with it. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, Mariners season. We've talked about this. This is one of the best sports times of the year.
I mean, you understand the filter now. Like, it's all about filter and dating. So now the filter's going to get a little tighter, right? When you say she better love it, you know, the big broad filter. I don't know how many are just going to love that. So you're already, you know, taking a little filter to the dating scene. But I mean, I certainly loved it. Justin, did you love it?
Loved it.
Never
Maura,
compromised.
Did you
Brock.
Love it?
Oh, I've seen it in person.
Never
like he has something else on
you
the computer at Mariners games. Like he'll be watching the game and then also have like college basketball on.
That's so
Brock,
good.
You should see it here. When I'm in the sports pit, it's a computer like during March Madness, computer, TV, 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 other TV, computer.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're living the dream here, Brock.
Is that your background when you were doing radio and you were kind of throwing all sorts of things? And didn't you work for the college? Who were you working for?
Yeah. USF, University of South Florida.
Yes.
And then IMG with all your old guys that have made it big. So,
By the way, Benetti is ticked.
At you or Brzezinski?
Well, I just sent him the MP3 today of Corey, followed by yesterday AJ, and he's had enough. He's ready to lash back. So maybe we need to think of a third guest tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, maybe just Benetti to get him on. But all right, we'll think of another one who can insult him, I guess. So we do have to get back to the Mariners' kind of extreme contrast. We touched on it a little bit to start this hour, but for how good the pitching has been, there have been some frustrating numbers coming out with the hitting. What has to change? We'll get into that. Mike Lefko and Brock Heward with you on Brock and Salk here on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Brock and Salk.
Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We got ranked in about 15 minutes. Brock, this is one I think you'll enjoy. I'm going to keep you in the dark on this, unless you really want to know.
I like surprises.
Okay.
Unlike Salk. I like surprises.
Yeah. This is, it was kind of a collective effort. It's one that we can all relate to. Mm-hmm. Although, I can't help but think you're going to have different experiences than we do. So maybe you won't feel the same way. But we'll get to that. It's something that everyone can relate to. And I know that rank becomes such a, you know, a
polarizing point.
Yes, that's the word. I was looking for a topic that splits you, and there was the word. And now my sleep is catching up with me there. But thank you. That was the perfect word. Awesome. It is such a polarizing topic. Just, you know. Take a look over here.
We have Maura, not polarizing? We
have Justin that feel different ways.
You know what's
ways.
Not polarizing? Your hoodie. You look great today.
Thank you.
I love that hoodie.
I'm going to try to point the right way on the stream.
Yeah, okay, that's
Simply Seattle.
That's the kid. I was wearing that, actually, and on Macy's recruiting trip right here to Oklahoma State. And the coach's husband is a big, big baseball guy. And I had that on. He's like, dude, I love that. I love the kid. I love Ken Griffey. And I think right there is a good segue to what this offense needs, because we all love Julio. There's nobody in this market that does not love Julio. And I think part of the reason we really, really, really love him is he expresses himself. He's not a robot. He shows his joy. He shows his frustration. You know, he kind of wears it all out there on his sleeve a little bit. So we don't have to sit here and wonder, man, I wonder what Julio's thinking. You know what he's thinking. You feel his joy, you feel his frustration and all of it. And right now, through 35 games, not too dissimilar to the last 2 years, man, it is a lot of frustration out the gate, right? It is just the power has just not been there. The slugging hasn't been there. The one home run that he's sitting there looking up at that stupid big board before every at bat, trying not to look at the leaderboard on the golf course or not look up there, but you can't help but notice it. And, you know, I think quite honestly, is we try to figure out this Mariners offense, and it's not to burden him. It's not like, oh, this is all on Julio. It's all Julio's fault. No. But when your superstar gets going and he starts scoring, guess what? The role players tend to follow.
Well, and we've heard Scott Servais say this so many times, and we know it to be true. He said the offense goes as Julio goes. So you do need the production from everyone else. This is not to let anyone else off the hook who has underperformed, because Julio's not the only one. But something that we've talked about a lot, we talked about earlier today, Brock, that Julio's going to get the bulk of the attention, good or bad, because of his personality, because of his demeanor, because he is all-star caliber. I mean, we saw it last year. He is an all-star. He captivated everyone when the whole baseball world came here to Seattle. So he is going to get the outsized amount of focus. And right now, with what Julio's doing, you're going to focus on the negative, because it just seems like with the lack of results, he's also in his head. And I mentioned this earlier to Justin and Maura when we started the show, that I think that eighth inning felt to me like he was just completely in his head during that at bat. He got rung up looking on a curveball that settled in right over the heart of the plate. And we talked about this with the approach of their starter yesterday, where he's not the biggest fastball guy. He throws it, but it's not anything overpowering. Sits 92, touches 94. And it was something Goldsmith said that both Justin and I were like, oh, and we went digging, that Aaron said, you know, we're seeing a little more fastball-heavy approach than I think the Mariners expected. And that got me digging into the pitching profile. And you know what? Yeah, he throws fastballs. Mariners are a good fastball-hitting team, but his fastball isn't overpowering. So it felt like the Mariners came in with this thoroughly scouted approach to sit maybe on the slider, which he did not throw. Why can't I forget his name? Woods, whatever. Yeah.
Simeon Woods Richardson.
Woods Richardson. Yeah. It's the guy who has a last name needs to be hyphenated, which is not. So that's the confusing thing. So Woods Richardson comes in, doesn't have an overpowering fastball. The Mariners felt like they were sitting slider, something they didn't see until the third inning. And what happens in those first two innings? Five of the first six strike out.
Right.
And then it just kind of summed it all up for me with Julio in the eighth that, hey, I think these guys are just really in their heads too much. That paralysis by analysis that we all go to.
Yep. And we kind of heard a story about that earlier in the year, and had to put some of the iPads away and let's just not overanalyze some of these things. And, you know, but and there he is, Brant Brown, the new coordinator. And we don't know all of the details behind the scenes. We see such a tiny and hear such a tiny sliver of, you know, some of the work that's going on behind the scenes. On one hand, Josh Rojas has come to life, right, with some of this analysis. On the other hand, it feels like with Julio in particular, he is just so in between. And is that swing? Is that approach? Is that a fundamental with his load? Is it any of these things? Is it all of these things? Is it just simply baseball, as we know? And we've watched him kind of like a butterfly coming out of a cocoon, and you want him to come out April 1, But it usually is when the weather warms, and it's usually a streak and a timing that just gets himself into rhythm. And, you know, and then I pointed this out earlier, as we watch some of these elite, amazing, amazing athletes, as you watch Ohtani, right, hit his 11th bomb last night. And I don't know about you, but I do enjoy some of the, like, the fundamental aspects of the swing. You know, I've got a youngster that's really, like, long and trying to simplify a swing and everything else with Titus and some of his other, like, 14-year-old teammates that are, you know, uncoordinated and trying to put it all together. It's fascinating to watch them. Can they get into rhythm? Can they feel what that's like? And you watch Ohtani swing and you're like, oh my gosh, it's just beautiful. When you watch Julio walk into the box, it's 6'3", 230 pounds, running as fast as anybody in baseball. You're like, let's go. Here we go, right? It's like a firework. I'm not lighting a little, you know, butterfly. I got an M80 here. And when this thing goes, it is going to be loud. And we just haven't seen that thing go.
Yeah, and what concerns me with Julio right now is just all the power metrics that we have come to expect from him are not there. His hard hit rate is down. Lowest it's been in his three seasons. His barrel rate is way down. Not to kind of bog people down in numbers, but, you know, he's had a double-digit barrel rate his first two seasons. It's at 6.4% right now. So all of those power numbers are down. And you mentioned that glaring one that he sees every time he goes up there, that one home run, that looms right now. Because when he's batting where he is in your lineup, and when he's an all-star and you structured a contract that you expect him to be in the MVP race, we had Mike Petriello of MLB.com on before the season, and he said Julio would be his AL pick to win the MVP. Ohtani's out of the American League. That's the pick. Julio finished top four last year. That would be the pick. Yep. And that's why this has been such a surprise and why we're focusing on it so much, on that side, on the poor offensive side.
I know folks love to hear Jeff Passan every Tuesday. He's has a personal situation going on. You could say some prayers for Jeff and his family, and just a great, great dude, and we'll hopefully get him back next week. But he said the same thing. He said the ceiling for Julio, are you realistic, or a realistic ceiling, is 40-40 club. Like, he, at this age, in his absolute athletic prime, maybe not his baseball prime yet, because he's still incredibly young, you know, kind of like our guy, keep referencing Ant-Man, because he's unbelievable there in Minnesota at 22 years of age, a year younger than Julio, 4 years into the league. This is now 3 years into the league for Julio. And I'm sure some of it, you know, that he gets tired of, Mike, which is slow starts. Well, he's just a slow starter. Just so he's want to do everything in his power, you know, to eliminate that aspect of it. And it just, unfortunately, right now isn't happening. And he's not the only one. As you said, man, this is a lineup right now that's got more home runs and doubles. That's got to change. That's really got to change. You know, over the years, my buddy Luke Arkin sent me some numbers, and clearly they hit more doubles on the road than they do at home, especially in April and May, where that ball really hangs in the marine layer in the alleys. So hopefully this, you know, the next 3 days, this is a ballpark. We saw it last night with Correa. This is a ballpark. You can put in the gaps, and there are doubles to be had, and hopefully we start to see some of those doubles come, because that's not sustainable. You hit more home runs and doubles, your offense isn't going to be any good.
Yeah, you mentioned that. 36 doubles, fewest in all of baseball for the Mariners as a team. But Brock, this is what makes the contrast so fascinating for me. The disparity is so wide in that the Mariners, in a playoff series, and I know it's almost verboten to say that, but in a playoff series, best of five, right? In the first round, you can shorten the rotation. You have all this rest in a best of seven as well. Mm-hmm. In a playoff series with this pitching, no one wants to face the Mariners because you have five ace caliber level pitchers you can run out there. Certainly Logan Gilbert, Luis Castillo, George Kirby.
Three
right now.
Sure.
You have those three that you could run out there in a best of five series, even in a best of seven. You don't really have to go beyond that. Bryce Miller as well. If those are your four, you only need to pitch four in the playoffs. Yep. The problem is what we saw last year. No one wants to face them in the playoffs. They have to get to the playoffs, and that didn't happen. And to me, that's just wild that we're at such an extreme this year where we have seen, and before that stretch ended on Sunday, the 21 consecutive starts of two earned runs or fewer by starters. They still have the most quality starts in baseball, 22 quality starts by Mariners pitchers.
Yep.
Logan Gilbert has been incredibly impressive. Logan Gilbert right now, I know AJ Pierzynski told you guys this, his ceiling's the Cy Young, he said. I think he could win the Cy Young this year if this continues.
Yeah.
With the rate he's going, with the cutter, with the splitter.
Yeah, Garrett Cole being out, and maybe some of the familiar names, you know, just not getting there by perception, that there are some other young guns there with him. And a kid in Detroit that's doing, you know, sick stuff as well. But yeah, I don't know, Mike. Part of me, and I don't know if this is just me projecting or me trying to learn patience over the years, but this offense feels like it has more than the Pollock Wong combo of last year. Like, there feels, and certainly there's, you know, a track record here lately with Garver and with Polanco that it's there, that it's there. And maybe it's grace in my old age. Maybe it's a little bit more patience. But I do really believe that when Julio, and this is not to put further pressure on him, it's just the reality that when you're that talented on any team, I've watched it for years in basketball, right, with my own kiddos and watching a ton of basketball. We've watched it with baseball. We watched what Julio did last August, elevating everybody around him once he gets going, right? We see this in the NBA playoffs. We see this in so many of these teams. We see with a quarterback in a Patrick Mahomes that just can make everyone around him better. It's like everybody goes, okay, we're good.
Yeah.
We're good because our star's good. And it just lets everybody else settle in rather than, oh man, we got to pick up Julio. Oh man, I got to produce. Oh, we got to do this because it's just not really happening at the top of the lineup. Once that unlocks, and it will unlock, and hopefully with some warmth and some weather, once that unlocks, I think, you know, you're going to see some complimentary baseball. And when that happens, you're going to maybe do what Minnesota's done. What did Corey Provost tell us, the play-by-play guy? They've won 14 of 15?
Yeah, they had the 12-game win streak, and then they lost, and they won yesterday. So
or 13 of 14?
It's been a stretch.
I mean, yeah. Just insane. Now it's feasting on the White Sox and the Angels and some bottom feeders in baseball. But still, you know, you have that in you. And with your pitching, you have that kind of streak in you. You're still 3 games above 500. You're still a half game back with an offense. It's been a little bit dormant, just waiting to get out of that cocoon and start to fly.
Yeah, and I think the issue, though, and the question that everyone has, and if you could answer this and if I can answer this, we wouldn't be doing this job. We'd be doing a different job in baseball. When is that going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Not that, yeah, we do expect it to, but when? Because it didn't happen until the very end of July last year for Julio and for this team. And It turned out that for a moment it was enough. But then that September brought him back down to just out of playoff contention. So is it going to take that long? And can
they sustain
it?
Well, this is going to be competitive May, man. I was looking at the rest of the schedule here in May. You know, you don't get the White Sox. You don't get the Angels. You don't get a bunch of bottom feeders. Even Oakland, who you are going to see at home in your next homestand, they're playing pretty good baseball and got some elite pitching in the back end of their bullpen. They can't hit either, but they can pitch the ball, and then it's the Orioles, and then it's the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is going to be a good competitive month of baseball that if and when it happens, and you can complement this pitching staff with a little bit more offense, we could see a streak of 12 of 13 wins in a row, just like these Twins got going right now.
We will see. Right now, though, we have to get to ranked.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwarmfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Every morning at 9:45 on Brock and Salk.
Top 10 list. I'm not buying it.
Ranked.
All right, Brock, I solicited Maura and Justin. I think you might have some to chime in with here as well because you fly a lot. You know, we all fly a lot, and this just came to me because Maura was coming back from a trip. I had to fly a couple places recently. I know you are flying all over the country. So I want to rank the most annoying parts about flying.
Okay, let me add just a tiny bit of context.
I know you're going to fly first class.
No, tiny bit of context.
Just invited into the cockpit. Yep.
So I'm just going to air out Benetti one more time.
Yeah.
Just air out Benetti week. So we were sitting in Kansas State last year in this dungeon at this hotel having our production meeting. We finished up, and it's late in the year, so things get really rambunctious. I'm like, okay, how many miles we got?
You're right? Going to feel bad, right? A little mile comparison.
And I have none because anytime I get them, we spend them and kids come home and try. I have like 10,000 miles. And Benetti's like sheepish. Like he tries to crawl out of the room. I'm like, you get back here. Hey, get back here.
He touching close to a million?
Way more than a million.
Way more.
1.5.
Ooh.
More.
Wow. Okay.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So, yeah, I'm around. I travel a lot, and I'm around people who travel a lot. So this will be good. Okay. Fire away.
So what? Do you have any to pop out to you? Because we have a
people
few.
That clip their toenails on the plane.
Oh, that's disgusting. Any personal hygiene on a plane. Is
who's done that?
You have run into someone who's done that?
Twice.
That would be my number one.
Twice
I've never had that happen.
Twice in first class, by the way. In first class. Ooh. Like, there's a level of entitlement that I can just have flip-flops on, pull out my clippers, and cut my toenails right in front of you.
Well, that's a good honorable mention. Oof. Wow, that would be awful. We have more normal things. Like, you guys had some good ones here. What did, Justin, you came up with some good ideas to the honorable mention.
Mine basically is, I don't know, and maybe this is just my luck, but seemingly every airport I've gone to in the last year and a half has been under construction in some way, and I have to take some sort of insane detour or get lost and miss something or lose my group or something.
Is all of SeaTac under construction?
Yes, feels like it.
That kind of builds into the frustration.
Horrible.
Yeah, you get lost. You can't find your bag. You can't even get in. It's all under construction. So that was an honorable mention. Maura brought up a good one about the dropping off your bag process.
Well, I have no problem with tagging my own bag and doing all of that, but I don't really understand the point of it because every time I do so, the people in front of me in line are confused and need things, and you still have to wait for the person at the desk anyways. And I feel like before, when they checked your ID and put the tag on, it was just as fast. So I don't get what tagging the bag saves, because there's always people in front of me
labor
in line
costs.
That need help.
Labor costs. That's what it saves.
Another couple more honorable mentions. The rideshare pickup areas. This was a big point of contention from Justin.
Yeah, many of these airports were not designed with the rideshare.
I added on to that, the drop-off or pickup spots in general, because it's way too congested. You're inevitably going to have someone dropping off their entire family, and they'll give their sob story for 10 minutes, blocking traffic while people are trying to get dropped off, or the people picking you up that will sit there. They don't circle around. If they're there an hour early, they're going to sit there.
I mean, this
move.
Is a hot take, and I hate to say this. SeaTac right now is one of the three worst airports in America. I'm just going to say it. And the Port of Seattle, I love you. But you're bad. You're bad. Your construction's bad. You land 40 minutes early. Oh, this is great. I land 40 minutes early at SeaTac. Nope, you're going to wait 45 minutes.
That's another one. Yep. That's another one. When you land early, but have to sit on the runway for the same amount of time.
SeaTac, you got to be better. I mean, you just got to be better. Hashtag be better.
Okay, so are we allowed to go to top five yet, or do we have to cram them all in the final 30 seconds?
Mention from 916, tank top wearers on planes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of gross.
Okay, yes. here's number five for me.
Big moles, hair coming out of bad places.
A lovely image there.
It's like wild waves.
Restaurants that close too early or aren't open early enough.
Yeah.
Because think about it. You got a 6 a.m. departure, or you land at 9:30 at night. Or you're leaving at 9:30 at night, especially when we go red eyes here from SeaTac or from anywhere on the West Coast, and everything is closed. There's nothing open. There's a vending machine open, and there's maybe a place to fill up your water bottle. And that's it.
Be better.
That's it. That's number five for me. Yep. Going along with that, number four, gate areas that are too small. You know how many people are on a flight.
Yep.
It's not 50.
Yep.
There shouldn't be like 50 seats or just 20. There are some areas that have been crammed in off the sides. Like, oh, who's flying out of this gate? Good luck. There's 20 seats crammed into this off-forgotten area of a terminal where no one flies out of. And inevitably, there's everyone that just spills out into the walkway, the concourse and everything.
Do you have gate guy on this top three, by the way?
Gate guy.
Yeah, gate guy. The one who has to stand in the line first and be gate guy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, look at me, guy.
Oh, we're getting there.
I can't stand that guy.
Okay, I am actually... Ooh.
This is bringing out some of the worst in me, by the way.
Because 253 has one who I need to push back on, and that is exactly what I hate. So 253, people who stand up the second the plane hits the gate. One of my top five complaints here, people that complain about people who stand up the second the plane hits the gate. Let me tell you why. I'm not going to stand up and walk forward. I'm going to stand up the second that plane lands, because I've been sitting for 2.5 hours or 3 hours or 4 hours. I need to stretch it out.
Well,
I'm not going to high knee. I'm not going to high knee Russell Wilson.
Pushing forward once they stand.
Right. But I hate that that has become a bad thing, that people complain, and a lot of people complain about people that stand the second the plane hits the gate. I get an aisle seat for that reason. So I can stand. Now, I'm not going to move. I'm not a barbarian. But I need to stand, stretch it out a little bit.
You know, as a matter of fact, you're going to stop people from trying to go to the front of the
plane. Yeah, I'm doing the public a service. I'm helping out with Morris' complaint there.
Love it.
Yeah. Okay, so I kind of jumped ahead. That was my number two, but I had to get to that. So my number three, we can all relate to this, I think. Maybe Brock can, and Benetti and his Million Mile Club. People who are surprised by TSA. Like, they have never gone through security before. You know, you're waiting. Maybe you wait 10 minutes. Maybe you wait 30 minutes. But inevitably, you're in front of someone who they get there, and they're like, all right, take all your stuff out. What? Wait, I have to take what out? Yeah. Oh, and then they're fumbling with the belt, and then they can't untie the shoes, which, by the way, wear some slip-ons, wear some kind of shoes that you can take off easily. They can't find their laptop. And they're opening every pocket in their backpack. Yeah. Or, and then they forget, inevitably. But you get multiple people who have no idea how to do a basic process like that. You get that or no? You got your clear or pre-check.
You know what I, you know what I say to those people? I actually say, is your first time playing?
Just straight up passive.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
A lot of people texting in, and this is a fair one, too, about the baggage thieves, the ones that try to put like a backpack up in the overhead space. People are trying to.
That's Salk, remember?
Oh,
we talked
really?
About that. Yeah. They asked him to put it below, and he was like, no.
Yeah.
Okay, then that's making the list. Absolutely. Yep. If you defiantly say no.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Salk's one of those guys, huh?
It's my carry-on. Right. Well, it's my carry-on.
Well, you know what? They say specifically you should check. You put the bigger item up there, and if you don't, and you know what?
Gosh, you're making me mad. Fine. Why are you making me mad?
Well, this is why I was mad. I wanted to rank things that made me mad.
That's a great show.
Exactly.
Now you're leaving angry.
You know, it's a way to vent. I will say it's okay to do that if it's clear that there is room after everyone's boarded. And you can see, you look across or above you, and there's room to put your backpack, your smaller bag, up there. But if you're sitting down right away and cramming your backpack up there,
selfish.
No, selfish.
You're selfish.
Yeah.
Okay, number one. What's your number one?
Number one is what you said, the gate guys. The guys that it'll be an announcement. Hey, we're going to board in 30 minutes. Let me sprint and get to crowd around the boarding area.
By the way, it's 99.9% men. All right. I don't see women doing that. It's you, gay guy. It's your arrogance. It's your hubris. Don't be that guy.
And inevitably, they're like boarding group F. But they have to stand there and make sure that they can get on the plane 25 minutes after this announcement.
There's no prize getting on the
plane first. There's no prize. All right, Brock, you got me venting there. So it was a good rank. We'll think of some good stuff for tomorrow.
Parents who don't stop their kids from kicking the back of your seat.
There's so many. We could rank five more things that bother us tomorrow. But good show, Brock. Thanks to Corey Provis. Thanks to Brady Henderson, Maura, Justin, Brock. I'm Mike Lefko. We'll be back tomorrow. But until then, Bump and Stacy up next.
Barn.
Pays
in the barn.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.